get up the other one. How much everybody stop?
Do you have a pencil one?
You guys that are applauding and screaming, make it louder because we're recording this. We want to get it on the tape.
Let's sell a little.
Don't worry, man. There's a microphone.
Is it? No, no repeats. No repeats. No, we're going to do Bongo Bongo again. I like that.
No repeats, right?
No repeats. Take a minute.
Yeah. Take those first and second. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the University of California, Irvine's 15th commencement is assembled. Will you please rise and remain standing until after the invocation? Now the Irvine Brass Ensemble will present our national anthem, conducted by Alfred Lang.
On behalf of the faculty of the University of California, Irvine, welcome to our 15th annual commencement convocation. The invocation will be given by the Reverend William F. Moore, who with his wife, Dr. Jane Ann Moore, is the co-pastor of the United Church of Christ in Irvine. The Reverend Moore.
Let us pray.
O thou who holds us all between the no longer and the not yet,
who has given us memories to learn from the past and wills to shape the future. As we stand here in this moment of transition, renew our courage to seek truth, justice, and peace. Bless this occasion, O God. Bless it with the joy and satisfaction for the achievements of this hour. Bless it with gratitude for parents, for faculty, for administrators, for staff, and for the people of the state of California. Bless it with hope for creative employment opportunities. Amen. For all the skills and knowledge attained here. And bless this occasion with repentance, O Lord, for all the shortcuts that have been taken, for all the neglect of caring relationships, and for all the bureaucratic jockeying Wait. Oh, Lord. Not necessary for institutional upbuilding. Free us from such burdens that we may move faithfully into the future. And we pray that thou would bless this country as it strives for justice and freedom. And we pray that thou would bless this university as it seeks and strives for wisdom and truth. And bless this joyful people that they may enjoy this occasion and remember it for a long, long time. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend Moore. Please be seated. As we gather here today for our annual commencement program, we will recognize the 2,140 students who have earned undergraduate, graduate, and professional degrees this year. The program for today's ceremony lists the name of every candidate in the academic or professional area in which she or she concentrated in qualifying for a degree. The list includes all of those students who qualified for degrees as a result of work completed during the fall and winter quarters, as well as the spring quarter just ending. Hence, there are more names on the program than graduates participating in the ceremony today. The program also lists 188 graduating seniors who have qualified for honors in their fields. Academic honors are awarded on the basis of nomination by the academic departments and programs and are given in recognition of outstanding scholarship and research. 21 students will receive the highest honor, summa cum laude, 43 will be graduated magna cum laude, and 124 will be graduated cum laude. The program lists those who have received a variety of special awards in the various academic areas. All of these students who have won honors for their academic achievements are wearing gold braid as part of their academic regalia today, as a means of giving them further recognition. We also have paid tribute to those students in honors convocation held last night on the campus. At this time, it is my pleasure to acknowledge the presence of those members of the Board of Trustees of the College of Medicine who are seated in the audience with the faculty. Will the trustees who are here please stand and be recognized? Thank you. I would like to take note at this time that the UCI College of Medicine yesterday held its presentation of candidates for the Doctorate of Medicine and administered the UCI oath for doctors of that degree. With the 79 students receiving the MD degree today, the total of medical graduates from Irvine is now 931. The year 1979-80 marks the beginning of a new decade and brings to an end 15 years of exciting development on the Irvine campus. With the graduation of the class of 1980, 10 full generations of students will have completed their degrees at UCI, swelling the ranks of our alumni to more than 18,000. In the relatively short period of 15 years following the opening of the campus, UCI has become a nationally recognized center for education and research. It was during the residency on campus of you who received degrees today that UCI was identified as one of the top 100 research institutions in the United States. For you and for the generations of students who have gone before you, this institution has opened doors to the world both intellectually and vocationally, affording opportunities that it would have been inconceivable had institutions such as this not existed. It has enriched your life as it has enriched the lives of thousands of others through the endless transmission of knowledge and ideas, and by its extensive programs of training and education, your individual skills and capacities have been strengthened and refined. The central purposes of the educational experience which you have received at UCI relate to, indeed center upon, your growth as individuals. To educate for individual growth means to work toward the development of a person who can, as a result of an education, find a stable economic life, technically or professionally, who can discover deeper patterns of living through cultural awareness and appreciation, who can take an active part, even a leading part, in the expansion of knowledge and the pursuit of truth, who is constantly aware of and receptive to the swiftness of change in modern civilization, who can be moved to an understanding of and desire for world peace, who understands the responsibilities of freedom together with its rights, and insists upon these responsibilities and rights for others, as well as for yourselves. And finally, one who is motivated to help solve the major problems of our age. Viewed from the perspective of your lives to date, and all that lies ahead of you, UCI's participation in your educational journey has been a very short duration. But we have pursued it with purpose and hopefully understanding, and remain, as your alma mater, committed to serving you on the exciting but dimly defined journey ahead. Now may I introduce those who share the platform today. Dr. Clark Kerr, President Emeritus of the University of California. Executive Vice Chancellor James McGaw, Dean of Graduate Studies Jaime Rodriguez, Dean of Undergraduate Studies Guy Sricello, Chairman of the Academic Senate Dr. Samuel McCulloch, Dean of the School of Medicine Dr. Stanley Vandenort. The student who shall present the class gift, a BA candidate in social sciences, Mr. Gerald Michalski. One of two student speakers, a BA candidate in social sciences, Ms. Patricia Perkins. A BA candidate in humanities, Mr. James Jenneroux. From the School of Engineering, Dean Alan Stubberud. The Dean of the School of Humanities, William Lilliman. The Dean of Physical Sciences, Everly Fleischer. The Reverend Jane Ann Moore, who will give the benediction. The Acting Dean of the School of Biological Science, Susan Bryant. The Dean of the School of Fine Arts, Clayton Garrison. The Chair of the Department of Information and Computer Science, Tom Standish. The Dean of the School of Social Sciences, Linton Freeman. the Dean of the Professional and Interdisciplinary Studies, Keith Justice, the Director of the Program in Social Ecology, Ellen Greenberger, Assistant Chancellor for Administration, Ramon Curiel, Assistant Chancellor for University Relations, and the father of son graduating here today, Michael Kearney, and the Associate Dean of the Graduate School of Administration, Mr. Stephen Karamajan. There are two groups here today to whom a very special debt is owed. They have encouraged and in some cases made great sacrifices so that the candidates before us could participate in these ceremonies. We salute them both and ask them to stand for a well-deserved round of applause first. Will the parents of the graduates please stand? There is another group of loyal, dedicated helpers whom it is now my pleasure to recognize. They do deserve much appreciation. Will the spouses of the degree recipients please stand? Our thanks to all of you and congratulations to the graduates. Each year, the graduating seniors choose to remember the campus with a gift. Mr. Gerald Michalski will represent his class in today's presentation. Mr. Michalski is a baccalaureate candidate in social sciences, majoring in economics. He served as a campus administrative intern in the Student Affairs Business Office this year. He also helped coordinate the student faculty colloquia series last year and volunteered his service as a tutor in both economics and language study. Gerald is polylingual, speaking Spanish, German, French, and I'm sure you'll find out shortly, English very well. Mr. Michalski.
Thank you, Chancellor Aldrich. Good afternoon. Each year, the graduating class presents a gift to the university with the money generated through the rental of caps and gowns from commencement. This year, the senior class gift will consist of 3 gas barbecue grills for the University Center, which is now approaching completion. The grills will be available on a checkout basis to student groups, campus clubs, and other organizations for their social and fundraising events. It is our hope that this gift will represent one more gesture towards helping the University Center improve the quality of life on campus here at Irvine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gerald. As a gesture from the administration, I will immediately match the resources in order to provide chains to be sure that they're still available to you when you seek to look them out. We hope to open in the fall, and certainly we appreciate this addition to the resources that will be available at the University Center. As tradition at UCI, a plaque commemorating the class of 1980 will be embedded in the pavement of Gateway Plaza. Now it is my pleasure to introduce the first speaker for our commencement ceremony, Dr. Clark Kerr, President Emeritus of the University of California. Dr. Kerr, who is a consultant to the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching, joined the University of California in 1945 as Director of the Institute of Industrial Relations at Berkeley. During his term as president from 1958 to 1967, the University of California blossomed in international prestige and research, teaching, and public service. In addition, Dr. Kerr oversaw the development of 3 new campuses to the university system, those at Santa Cruz, San Diego, and here at Irvine. He has served on a number of distinguished panels and boards in his long career of public service, among them the Board of Directors of the American Council on Education, the Board of Trustees of the Educational Testing Service, the International Council for Educational Development, and the Rockefeller Foundation. Dr. Kerr has been cited by the U.S. News and World Report as the most influential person in the nation in the field of education, and by Change Magazine as the person who contributes most significantly to the thoughts and actions of American learning. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce Dr. Clark Kerr.
Chancellor Aldrich, members of the class of 1980, looking forward to your creative employment opportunities, and the parents and friends of the graduates of today, and a number of very long and good time friends, such as Dan Aldrich, your chancellor, Ivan Hinderacher, who is here today, recently retired as chancellor at the Riverside campus and the original vice chancellor when this campus was founded, and several of the early members of the Irvine faculty, some of them seated behind us on the platform, who have made such great contributions to the development of this campus. It's a very great pleasure to come back to Irvine and to see all the developments of recent years. My predecessor as president of the University of California, Robert Gordon Sproul, who served 28 years, once told me there are only three possible commencement addresses. He was a very famous orator, and he spoke to high school graduations all over the state. He said one of them was to look around you with dismay. For that, he charged $50. The second one was to look forward with hope. That cost $100. The third possible speech was to first look around with dismay, then look forward with hope, and that cost $150. Well, I'm not going to give one of those standard commencement addresses. I want to instead talk about the campus here, UC Irvine. 1960, 1980, 2000. And I speak as one who was involved in the development of this campus before there were any anteaters here. Now, the members of the class of 1980 become alumni today, and it's hoped that many of you will continue to have an interest in the campus after you graduate in the years to come as you have as students. I thought that even as you're leaving, you might like to know a bit more about the development of this great adventure, this building of the Irvine campus into a leading research university in such a short period of time. And I thought also that perhaps some of the parents here today might like to hear a bit about the development of this campus that they're now visiting. 1980 seems a good time to look back, 20 years since the founding of Irvine, 20 years ahead to the year 2000, when some of you will be coming back for your 20th reunion, which I now know seems to you like impossibly far ahead, but when you come back will seem like only yesterday. Well, where does Irvine stand today after 20 years? A campus of 10,000 students, one of the 100 designated research, outstanding research universities in the nation, out of some 3,000 campuses altogether. These campuses designated because of their output of PhDs and the amount of federal funds which they have earned in competition across the nation. And it is the only campus founded in the past 20 years to be in the select group of the top 100. I here leave out the San Diego campus of the university because its official founding date is 1912, but it also is in the list if you count it as being founded in the 1960s. And there have only been three campuses since World War II, of the more than 1,000 which have been started, to be in this select category of the 100. They're Brandeis outside Boston and Stony Brook of the State University of New York on Long Island. And this campus, in the course of 20 years, has built up a library already of 1 million volumes. I remember when I was a new chancellor at Berkeley in the early 1950s, presiding over a convocation there to celebrate, after 80 years of the history of Berkeley, the acquisition of the 1 millionth volume. And you have here a faculty that has won many national and international awards, and more coming all the time. Now, how did it all start? Back in 1957, the Board of Regents decided to establish 3 new campuses to meet what was then called the tidal wave of students after the increase in the birth rate at the end of World War II. And the state of California was asking the university to plan a system which would accommodate the students that went along with a population in the state of California by the year 2000 of 59 million people, they then said. I might say that the class of 1980 is the very end of the tidal wave of students for which the 3 new campuses were prepared. In choosing Irvine, we looked at some 23 sites in the greater Los Angeles area, decided this was by far the best. I might say that that cool breeze wafting in from the Pacific was a very compelling argument for selecting this location. And so Irvine was chosen in 1960, and that's the founding date then of the campus. The next step was to get a physical development plan, which was developed under the famous architect who still serves this campus, Bill Pereira. Then the next step was to get an academic plan. We wanted this campus to be unique within the University of California as well as elsewhere, and decided that the theme would be to try to recreate the land-grant tradition in the modern setting, with an emphasis upon community service for an urban society, and to organize the campus in really modern ways, to set up a modern organization of academic life, the divisions with which you're familiar instead of the old-fashioned College of Letters and Science, so large and so diversified, to go very heavily in the direction of the fine arts, as had been done so splendidly here. Instead of dividing administration into business and public, to have a school of administration, to develop biology, not along the old lines of botany versus zoology, but the modern method which so many other universities have followed, of cellular biology, molecular biology, and so forth. To put the emphasis upon comparative literature rather than dividing literature up by one language versus another, and in various other ways making this an absolutely modern campus in the intellectual world. And then our next decision was leadership. And in 1962, we chose Dan Aldrich to be the first chancellor. Dan is the only person that I, as president of the university, considered for this position, the only name presented to the Board of Regents for the position, and the only person they ever considered. Dan had had wide experience in the university at Riverside, Davis, and Berkeley, and was a statewide dean of agriculture. And I thought then, as I do now, that he was the one perfect choice for this great responsibility. So these were the decisions which were made, which give rise now to your 15th commencement 20 years later. And I think that the wisdom of each of these decisions to have a campus, to locate it here, to get the physical development plan you have and the academic plan and the chancellor have all been confirmed over the years. And the decision in which I take the greatest personal pleasure is the last of those, the selection of Dan Aldrich as your chancellor. Now, the groundbreaking for this campus took place in 1964, almost to this date. To show the interest of the people of Orange County and the surrounding area in it, 15,000 people came to the groundbreaking, realizing what an historic event it was. The groundbreaking was attended by the President of the United States and the Governor of the State of California. It was a period of high optimism for the United States, for higher education, for the University of California, for Irvine. And there was on that day in 1964 no hint of the great changes to come in the intervening period. No hint of the Vietnam War, no hint of Watergate, no hint of the OPEC crisis and all the difficulties that have come between then. It was a period of great optimism. At least in respect to this campus, that optimism has been justified. We opened in 1965, not with the 1,000 students we expected, but being overwhelmed with some 1,600. And we thought we were on the way to having 27,500 students in the year 2000. And then something very basic happened. The fertility rate went down. And it went down very drastically. When we were planning this campus, the fertility rate was 3.7. By the time we welcomed the first students, it was down to 2.6. And as I stand here today, it's down to 1.8. Which I might note, incidentally, for those of you who are in the field of biology, is not at the net reproduction rate to keep America going very long. Now, also at the time, there was extremely heavy in-migration into the state. At that time, 500,000 new people coming per year. And so we planned this campus for some 27,500 students. Looking ahead, this is not going to happen. The United States is facing, and higher education in particular, a great demographic depression, which is going to reduce the number of young people, the college-going age cohort, by some 25%. That'll be offset by more women coming, more minorities, and more adults coming back on campus. So that the expectation is that the decline will not be at the full 25% level. Now, what about Irvine within this picture of the future? My own guess is that Irvine is relatively invulnerable. That as one of the leading research universities of the nation, is sufficiently attractive to students to recruit them, even as other institutions lose. That has a strong series of graduate programs, which are bound to increase in their popularity, as in medicine, administration, and in other fields. So I would expect that Irvine, in the year 2000, is not going to be at the 27,500 for which we planned these 1,500 acres, but more nearly what it is today, at the current 10,000 holding its own. And so the challenge for the future is quite different than the challenge of the past. And the challenge of the future is now qualitative growth, as it had been quantitative growth when we began here. And let me say, that is the more difficult of the two. But this campus has a good location, it has good leadership, and it has an unusually high level of forward momentum. Over the last decade, most colleges and universities have been standing still, and Irvine has been moving forward, and I expect that momentum to be kept up. And so in the year 2000, when those of you who come back from your 20th reunion see this campus again, I expect that it's going to rank even higher in the world of scholarship than it does today, and that your degrees will be even more highly valued in the U.S. and around the world. And in the year 2000, Irvine will stand as the most successful, totally new American university campus of the second half of the 20th century. And briefly in conclusion then, looking back on the occasion of the 15th commencement, at the accomplishments of the past 20 years, and ahead at the prospects for the next 20 years, I'd like to say to Dan Aldrich and to the many others associated with this development that here was a great opportunity. It's been greatly matched by accomplishment, and Irvine will stand as one of the great success stories in the modern history of American higher education. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kerr, for your message. Before, however, you are relieved entirely from responsibilities today, I would like, on behalf of the Irvine campus, in recognition for your distinguished service to not only the University of California, but all of higher education in this country and throughout the world, to make this presentation to you. Berkeley has a Distinguished Service Award. Campuses of one description or another have recognized their leaders, but to you this afternoon, we would like to present what we think is a unique statement to Clark Kerr. The University of California, Irvine honors Clark Kerr for his contribution to higher education and service to the university. Dynamic scholar and truly superstar in the world of education, pragmatist who has dreamed the impossible dream and who made it come true, creator of university campuses, including UC Irvine, pathfinder into new academic dimensions, and university president of integrity and conviction,
sure,
presented at the 15th commencement, June 14th, 1980. We now shall move to our second and third speakers of our commencement ceremonies. Today, first student speaker is Ms. Patricia Esco Perkins, a candidate for the baccalaureate degree in social sciences. Patricia is a charter member of the Delta Sigma Theta sorority and also a member of Miss Ebony. Her campus activities include service as a volunteer in the Verano Child Care Center and as an elections commissioner for the Associated Students off campus. Patricia worked as a CETA counselor and volunteer for the Santa Ana Girls Club, the Black Women's Forum, and Newport Volunteer Service. It should come as no surprise that Patricia plans to a career in social work. Patricia Perkins.
Good afternoon, Chancellor Aldrich, honored guests, fams, and families of the graduates and graduates. Each new springtime brings to most people a sense of beginning and a sense of new discoveries. Although it may be the end of our educational experiences here at UC Irvine, we continue on to the next phase of either obtaining a more formal education or sharing our present knowledge with others. For myself, and feeling confident that I speak for all the graduates here today, the 1980s present that sense of a new beginning and reminds each of us of our responsibilities in the upcoming decade. At this very moment, this park is filled with leaders of tomorrow. Each vocation and each professional field will no doubt benefit if we, the graduates, remember these responsibilities. First and foremost, I cannot express enough how important it is to keep in mind and in heart those who have helped us come this far financially, emotionally, and spiritually. Friendship and family ties have given us a certain strength to continue on when we began to believe that there was no light at the end of our educational tunnel, and a deep-rooted love that to us was not always evident, but nonetheless was there all the time. At those times when we felt we could not bear again to hear that cliche, patience is a virtue, we began to learn how to heed those words. And with this patience, we can achieve our goals. Secondly, the need for a redefinition of our values emerges. We must be honest with ourselves. Communication on personal levels seems to be deteriorating at a rapid pace. This cannot help but contribute to the lack of caring and disharmony within our communities. Our responsibilities involves making sincere efforts to once again bring about more of we and less of me. With this in mind, my hopes for the 1980 graduates include sturdier, more lasting relationships, doing our best to aid those within our communities who need the most assistance, and possibly, with this genuine concern, to strengthen our nation as a whole. Our responsibilities in the 80s include a third factor. Graduates, as future leaders, and with the growing chaos in the world today, we are obligated to use our education to make this a better place in which to live. God gives us the ability to learn and also gives us the free will to use that learning constructively or destructively. Needless to say, there is enough destruction. Let us take on the challenge to make our nation more creative. And lastly, we must not merely consider the welfare and happiness of our generation, but that of our children's generation and their future generations. We want them to enter a human world with all the hopes and opportunities that we have. In conclusion, I ask you graduates to take advantage of our new springtime and find all the beautiful things there are to be discovered. Remember that even after we have accomplished our ultimate goals, never forget from where you came. Be grateful for and steadily appreciate the support you receive from your loved ones, for this love will carry you over many obstacles. Take to heart our responsibilities of sustaining personal relationships, assisting those within our various communities that may not have the opportunities which we do, and using our education for a sturdy foundation for future progress. For the decade of the 1980s, let us take on the challenge of meeting the needs of an ever-changing society. Thank you.
Our next speaker, James Genereau, is preparing to become a professional writer. His special interests are in film and theater. James participated in the UCI Education Abroad program in 1978 and studied playwriting at the University of Warwick, Coventry, England. While a student there, he wrote a play entitled Tekel, which was critically acclaimed. I present Mr. James Genereau.
Wow. So this is graduation, huh? It's incredible. It's amazing, really, how fast the time has gone by. I mean, it seems like just yesterday I was a freshman. I mean, those were two of the best years of my life. Jeez, I wish my parents thought I was that funny. Seriously, the last 5 years have been actually quite good for me. I mean, back in high school, I was bored to death. Really bored. UCI was a relief after that. You see, much to my surprise, and probably in spite of myself, I actually learned something here. The first thing I had to learn was to be careful to make sure that classes didn't get in the way of my education. Some of the rest of you learned that too, I hear. Then I learned that anything free is worth exactly what you paid for it. I learned that generosity is completely different from altruism. And altruism is a learned perversity. I learned, and this is important, honestly, very important to me. I learned how to throw a frisbee 240 yards, have it curve between two trees, almost mutilate a bio-sci major. Wait a minute. And then, and then hit a lamppost dead in the center. No! Bravo, well done. That was a comment from the recipients of the Frisbee Golf Scholarships the last 4 years. I learned also that a critic is a person who creates nothing and thereby feels qualified to judge creative people. There is considerable logic in that because the critic is then unbiased. He or she hates all creative people equally. I learned that if you pick the wrong time of the day, it can take 3 long hours to get on the Balboa Ferry. I learned that one of the key words to a satisfying life and existence is the word balance. But there's a terrible danger and indeed tendency for balance and moderation to become mediocrity if we let it. I came to love all passions, even if I disagreed with them. Because without passions, we take no risks. And when we take no risks, then we don't live. I learned that gays are people, and so are women. Took me too long to learn that, I hate to admit. I learned the huge difference between wanting something and needing it. If you want a loan from the bank, no problem. If you need it, no chance. I learned from my friends, good friends, Tim and Odd, the most important thing you need to know on Friday afternoons, the best place to go for happy hour. I learned from the really excellent UCI Education Abroad program that gasoline is actually relatively cheap in California. I look forward to the time when gas costs $3 a gallon or more in California like it does in the rest of the world. Maybe then we'll finally implement intelligent alternative energy systems instead of the ridiculous one we have now. This doesn't apply to most of you, at least I hope not. But it's unfortunate that the American people have to be clobbered over the head before they figure something out. I find that parking lot out there a bit appalling. I'm embarrassed. We have hostages in Iran, and there's Cadillacs still out there. We've gotten so bad at anticipating how to behave in relation to the rest of the world. God, I hope it doesn't lead us into a war. I mean, personally, I believe in drafting beer, not people. I've come to think that the fundamental problem of the world is overpopulation, and the fundamental problem of the human psyche is fear. Both can easily overrun us. Reproduction and caution have their purposes, of course, but we have to be careful about both. Actually, a large part and a very important part of what I learned here was how to unlearn old falsehoods. This is the key to keeping a young and healthy mind, retaining our ability to unlearn what we thought we knew. So, we've learned and unlearned many things here. If nothing else, we learned how to get a degree. So let's be proud of what we've done, give ourselves a pat on the back, and go out and get drunk after this. This is, after all, a celebration, a rite of passage. But passage to where? All right, we've learned something. Now, what do we do with what we've learned? After today, when someone asks, what do you do, we can no longer say, I'm a student, or even a retired student, for that matter. That's unfortunate, isn't it? Some of you, of course, you're going to grad school, clever devils. You don't have that problem. Most of us will start something new, but what will that be? Choice,
freedom. I find it terrifying. I mean, there'll be trouble for a while, preferably a long while. But then eventually I'll run out of money, and the question will start coming, so when are you going to get a job? Then I'm going to be real sorry I didn't apply to grad school. And of course, there'll be the battle with the parents. You know, accept your parents' love, and of course their money. But don't accept your parents' expectations. It is our choice. It is our responsibility, what we do with our degree. And maybe that will be nothing. Our choice. Or maybe we'll find a job and make lots of money. Our choice. We are free. We're also responsible to ourselves for the result of what we do with our freedom. It surprised me to learn here that the largest employer in California is not Disneyland or the state or medicine. The largest employer in California is the arms industry. Yeah, boo, I agree. There was a time when war was caused by the territorial imperative. Now it's very often caused by an avalanche of stockpiled weapons made in California. Of course, we are free to make money making weapons, but you're responsible to yourself for the result of that action. It's not enough to say, if I didn't take the job, somebody else would. That is a cop-out, and you know it. Do we design solar equipment at a low salary, or do we make big bucks with Texaco? As a writer, is it enough for me to just entertain, or does my responsibility go beyond that? So you can engineer genetics. I believe you. I never touch the stuff myself. But what are the consequences? Just ask the question. I'm not saying let's go out and change the world. We'll do better than those idiots who graduated last year. Not at all. I know that's a bunch of rubbish, and so do you. I am, however, saying that we have power over our own lives and over our own situations. If you're bored with what you do, it's your own fault. Jean-Paul Sartre died this last term, but the roads to freedom are still here. When we leave here, we're free to create the situation for ourselves that we choose. And if we mess it up, we have no one to blame but ourselves. I have often heard adults complain that they regretted not having taken the chances necessary to get what they wanted out of